Hi, everyone. Welcome to Turning Point. I'm your host, Blaine Birch, co-founder and CEO at DryRun, and really excited today to have the second, actually probably third co-founder from Learner on our show. And Kevin Horak, co-founder, chief design officer at Learner, just had Greg on recently. And John actually had on the show back during his Zep days, but I know he's also involved with Learner now. And so really excited to have you guys on because it's such an interesting perspective and how all three of you guys sort of came together and moved forward with Learner. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for hopping on.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Blaine. It's always good to chat with you. You've done my show or both shows a couple of times, and I always love chatting with you. And we've known each other for a number of years now, so it's great.
Yeah, it's almost about time to go and catch up over a beer one of these days, and it'll
when
come
you're back in Canada
when the snow's gone. Let me know.
you'll fly back.
Yeah, when the weather's good, we'll be back into patio time. I know Learner's a relatively like sort of a recent initiative for you guys, a recent project for you guys. Not really a project, business. But before we get into Learner, I've some of the stuff goes interchanging in my brain of where something's at or whatever. And I was actually just at a loss for the word, but let's go back to where you got started as an entrepreneur. Cause you've done some really cool stuff and including, I want to talk about your show cause you've had it forever and it's really, really done some cool stuff. So where was your first step into entrepreneurship?
I think it started off, I kind of got lucky. I'm one of the few people, like my dad worked government basically his whole career. And during the 80s, he used to bring home the little like Apple IIe on the weekends. And I remember playing like Stratego and just messing around with the computer. And then we kind of got our own computer early 90s at home. And I remember like getting to be one of the first people on the internet. And we got like an hour a slot a week where we could connect to the government and then out to the internet before like people had it. And I just remember being like completely blown away because you could get different, like obviously you could get stuff that you couldn't get anywhere. Right.
Yeah.
And so I kind of fell into it a little bit. I remember learning how to build little websites when we were in, what was it? When I was 12 in what, like grade nine? No, what doesn't matter. Grade seven, I think it was.
Okay.
And we were learning HTML and we were building our, and like, I credit Mrs. Larson from my like elementary or junior high actually like teaching us this. And so I was tinkering with this stuff kind of on the evenings and weekends. Luckily I had a computer at home. My dad was in tech. You know, my uncle's in tech. Like basically all the immediate males in my family were in computers and tech. And so it kind of just was there and I got to play with it. And then, so fast forward a bit, I started building kind of like band fan pages for a while to kind of, and then I ended up freelancing just in the evenings while I was in high school. I ended up going to Rosh Shep, which is just a high school in town that had an okay computer program, but I ended up going to a different school, Vic downtown, because their computer program was way better for 11 and 12. And we ended up building, the school website in Flash back when Flash was a thing.
We were learning
like Photoshop. And so I was very exposed to all this stuff really early on. I ended up still kind of doing my own little web design business in high school. And then I ended up leaving high school a month early to go to Nate, which is like a tech college up here. And then I ended up getting hired at the university, still kind of freelanced a bit, tried always building some software here and there, but nothing that ever went anywhere. It was kind of just, well, you know how it is. It's hard, right?
Yeah. And it's so, man, it's like you're bringing back all these nostalgia, right? Because like I'm a few years ahead of you. So, but not that far. So like kind of when you were in sort of that junior high and high school, I was in like my first year of university. So just three, four, five years ahead or something.
Yeah. I'm 39. It will be just for some context.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm about close to 10 years older than you. So, but I remember those days really vividly. I remember, you know, like the first building those first websites was just straight up HTML and we had Netscape, I think we were using. And then Flash was just this unbelievable cool thing. And but I know exactly the time you're talking about when you said that there was not sort of in a way there wasn't that much you could do with it, because there wasn't much you could do with it. Like we were my first job, and I was the only time I had kind of a job first 2-3 years at university. That was the only time I've had a job where I haven't been on my own with my own business. But I was just working in a design studio and brought in kind of web design and Flash and all these things that I was doing. And then we started to get our first clients because people knew they had to be on the web, but you're just making this little itty bitty brochureware website.
Yeah.
And it didn't do much. And e-commerce was really expensive and really hard to do. And even years later, in my own company, they were big and contractors and all this to get us set up with what is now Shopify for $20 a month.
It's 100%. Such
a different world. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like, I know, like when I was working in the university, we'd go shoot the video at like a conference that for doctors or whatever. And then we'd build the interactive CD-ROM with all the like menu systems to like play the different videos. That was pretty cool. And then you'd like hand out DVDs or CDs at the time. But and then, so I don't know, I kind of been, I think the big thing is I didn't really become an entrepreneur probably until my early 30s. I think in a lot of cases, I was always scared to say like, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. I'm too scared to do that. Right. And I think, so I basically worked a lot of jobs. I actually met John before Greg, probably 2004. And I was a company I was working at. We were going to potentially use Mailout, their email service, for a product we were working on at the time. So I've kind of always had the luxury of building product pretty early on, since kind of the early 2000s, but it was never for myself. I tried things on the side with maybe friends, but it never really went anywhere. We'd get 80% and give up or whatever. Like most of that stuff never went live. And then I've worked, I think Learner's the fifth or sixth company Greg and I and John have worked on together as a project. I worked at Zep for a while. I worked at Mailout for a while. We did Inkdit, which was a failed startup that they shut down a number of years ago. And then out of Zept came Learner, and we can dive into that later, but I started, you mentioned the radio show kind of really by accident 7 years ago. I got asked to be on somebody else's show, and I'd wanted to do a podcast since like podcasts were a thing.
Yeah.
Probably 10 years before that. So like 17 years ago, like when it was really early on, but I was always scared to do it. And my thing was, is I was even scared to post like a blog post. Like I'd write blog posts about whatever, and I would never publish them because I was always like so scared, you know, like the three people that would maybe read it. I don't know why that was such a big thing for me, but I was like just scared. And so I originally started the show really to get over my fear of public speaking. But what happened was I could never record an episode. I just couldn't do it. And so I got asked to be on somebody else's show. I was not what they were looking for at all. It was, I can't even remember. It doesn't matter. And so I said to them, are they looking for another show? And the lady was actually, her show was airing on a FM station in Atlanta. And so I had a call with the station manager about a week later, pitched them ideas, basically just interview startups and founders and other people in tech, similar to what you're doing. I think it's great. And they were looking for a similar show at the time. And so I had to go a little bit of media training, which I laugh at because it was literally like, watch these YouTube videos. and that was it. And so you can't see my screen right now, but I've been trying to not say like as much. And so I have little sticky notes, like those virtual ones on the Mac in the bottom of my corner. This is like no like, and they're just repeated a bunch. So I can, I think the point I'm trying to get across is I've been doing this so long to really, it started to get over my fear of public speaking, and why I needed to be on radio is because, not because it's radio, which still kind of this mystical thing to me, but I was accountable to somebody every week to get them a show. And so I had to get a guest, had to record the show. I had to edit the show. Well, you know,
but
if I was just like, I'm going to start a podcast and I'm just going to post it to Apple every week, I would never do it. I need that accountability with most things, if not everything I do. And so, it was really just get over my fear of public speaking. And so the fact that it's been going for so long is kind of like weird to me even.
Yeah. And is it still on radio or is it on podcasts as well? Or
yeah, both. Yeah.
Both. Okay. And the name of the show, share it so everyone and where they can find it before I forget.
It's called Building the Future. It's on all the, it's probably easier if you search Building the Future with Kevin Horek, H-O-R-E-K. There were a couple other Building the Futures that kind of came after. I think some have kind of come and gone and I don't know. People were like, aren't you mad? And I was like, not really. Like some, a lot of them were like, one was doing hardware or something. And the other one was like a startups or a guy was covering startups just in Africa. I was like, I'm not going to go after people. And I think it's great. Like, I think everybody should do a podcast.
I'm pretty sure there's probably 60 or 70 turning point, you know, but I came up with the idea. I'm like, whatever. It's I like it. I'm going to go with it. I'm not going to come up with anything that specific, you know, although my other podcast, Nobody Told Me with Mike and Blaine, that'd be a hard one for someone else to do the exact same thing.
That's fair.
but anyway, well, tell me a little bit about like, you know, you've been at that 7 years and you've sort of transitioned from radio and much more. And so that, like, what has changed in that time and how has the sort of potential market or anything has changed in that time?
I think, well, about 2 years in, the media company that puts out the show and puts it on actually FM, puts out a TV version. So there's actually like a TV version where I've done actually some in-person versions of that. Or episodes, I guess. And then most of them I do just how we're doing it now, just through Zoom or Google Meet or something else. But I think the thing that I've used it for is networking. Like and you probably have the same thing. Well, some of the people obviously that I've had, I could potentially meet up with or chat with and it'd be fine. But I think the big thing is like networking with people has been the biggest thing that I've come out of it. Cause I don't really have a product or service to sell. Sure, I've gotten some freelance work here and there because I'm a designer and I host a show and they went to my portfolio and they liked what they saw, but I've never really tried to use it to sell a product or service, which I think a lot of people do with their, and I think even you'd say you're doing Turning Point to help promote Dry Run, right? Where
exactly. Like I say, that's what it's for, but really it's just so that I get to chat with other entrepreneurs and have some fun talking with them. And it's a little bit like, you sort of get access to people you network, but I also get to catch up with people like you and Don and Greg and all. It's a great way to get and just sort of talk about business for an hour. And then at the side note is like, and I can promote Dry Run a little bit too, but I'm not expecting like, this is not our number one way to get customers by any means. Right. But it's got a little bit of an angle, I guess. So.
But I also think too, it at least for me, and I'm curious if you would agree with this, is sometimes when you're obviously you're an entrepreneur, there's going to be many low points. Sometimes I find just talking to other entrepreneurs and even working in questions into my show about the struggles I'm going through currently. Like I'll never say like, hey, I'm going through this. Can we talk about that on the show? But I'll ask like, we're trying to raise money right now. Like, do you have any advice for people struggling with that or any tools that have worked, like stuff like that. And then I find like, that gives me motivation to kind of, okay, pick yourself back up. We got to keep going and doing this instead of just like, okay, I'm done. I got to quit this and just get a real job.
Yeah. Like I had a conversation with an entrepreneur just a couple of weeks ago and startup entrepreneur and we got connected on LinkedIn said, yeah, well, it's always happy to chat with other entrepreneurs. And so like we just got on a call on Zoom and she was fairly new into the kind of a first time entrepreneur. It's a great concept and all this kind of stuff. But I had to reassure her. I said, like, look, no matter what you think, it's hard for everybody.
Yeah.
In public at all, everyone wants to make it seem like, easy peasy. We're killing it. Everything's all up. And it isn't for anybody. I don't care how big the business is. There's always challenges as soon as you peel back the curtain a little bit.
Yeah. And I think even just a good example, like I was talking to a guy that's been successful for a number of years. His whole dev team is in Ukraine right now.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, obviously that's terrible, but you know, like just trying to manage, like, how do you handle something like that, it's completely out of your control. You feel terrible for what's happening and these people. And then you're just like, okay, my problem today is nothing compared to that, right?
Like, yeah. And it's like, that is so awful on so, because these are people that you know, you care about and you love and you know, 100%. They're part of your team. But then also there's the reality at the end of the day too, where it's like, yeah, but I can't stop my business because I gotta keep everything. I gotta pay people. They all have, like, 100%. How do we keep going? And yep. So now it becomes multi levels of challenges and fears and everything. And that's a really tough situation. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Interesting. All right.
No, I sort of down. No, there, but I think it's just like giving people that perspective of like, okay, this is hard. You will get these issues. And like, there's things that we all go through, no matter whether it's day one or day like 500, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's funny, cause I've been at Dryrun for a few years now, and even going back before the launch, like we launched it, just kind of like, it was an idea and I was kind of toying around with it and everything. And I know that, like, it's a regular occurrence at some point, something's going to be really challenging. And there's some of those things that just keep you awake at night. And they're so, like, sometimes they can feel like the biggest thing in the world. And the interesting thing is, if I think back over the last few years, obviously there's been some real challenges. There always are. Yeah. I can completely relate to the feeling, that stress, that anxiety, that staying awake at night, but I can almost never remember the specifics.
I know.
I just know that feeling I can remember, but I'm like, I don't know, there was something. But that's also kind of encourages me next time I go through a really tough time to go, yeah, you know what? 6 months from now, I probably won't even remember what this was. Yeah. You know,
I know. And trying to wrapping your head around that when you're in the moment at 3 a.m. and you woke up and you can't sleep.
Yeah.
And trying to remember, like, okay, I need to fall back asleep. This isn't really that important. You know, I'll forget it in a few weeks, is really hard to do.
It's easier during the day at 3 a.m. Yeah. I don't care what you do. It's not happening.
That's fair.
It's it's a challenge that everybody goes through, every entrepreneur. And that's the thing that for sort of those newer entrepreneurs they're now part of this entrepreneur fraternity, basically. And when you talk, I always encourage entrepreneurs, no matter who you are, talk with other entrepreneurs, even if they're not in remotely the same industry as you, because you'll find they have similar challenges with staff or suppliers or this or that, or banks or lawyers or whatever. There's always these challenges. And it helps to have frank conversations with other entrepreneurs. It helps you know that you're not alone, and other people have got through the tough parts that you have to go through.
Totally. Well, and I think a lot of people that haven't gone through it think you're kind of crazy for what you do. Like, one of my best friends, like, could never be an entrepreneur. And I love the guy to death, but he just doesn't have that personality type. It would drive him mental, right? Because he just started working like a office job, and he was talking about, like, oh, like, it's, I hate this and that. I'm just kind of thinking, like, man, that's just any office you go to, those are problems. But to him, they were like these huge, it's like, okay. Like, it's just interesting how you're either, I think you can, I don't think you're like necessarily born an entrepreneur. I think you can become one.
Yeah.
And if you know, I don't know how that transition is, but I think anybody can do it if they really focus on it and have the support system to do that, whether it's like friends, family, loved one.
Yeah.
But I think not a lot of people can push through and not give up, because that's the hardest part, is like not giving up.
But I think in a way that's some of the things that are, like, I think anyone has the opportunity, except that I think there's some things that are kind of hardwired into people that make them more likely to be, to be an entrepreneur, but also to be successful at it. And like, I think that was one of the things, you mentioned, one of the things is an absolute relentless faith and the ability, like the ability to, take that, just, like you said, just keep going under sort of any circumstances. And the other side is there is, you have to have a really high risk tolerance. Like, I don't feel like I've got a really high risk tolerance until I look at all the stuff I do and go, yeah, well, that's, like a completely unnatural risk level for other people. Yeah. You know, entrepreneurs, like ones that are small, tiny, just getting started, and will sit there and have gone, yeah, I just like basically blew through a few years worth of salary in one go, right? And not even
think 100%. About it. I think the other thing that's interesting for me, though, at least kind of talking to people that have come out of the pandemic, it seems, well, we're not fully out, I shouldn't say out, but that people are getting a lot more comfortable with not making the same salary every month. So like you might make, I don't know, whatever, like thousands of dollars this month, maybe the next month you make 10 grand, then next month you're making $2,000. I don't know, whatever the number is, it doesn't really matter. But I think people are more comfortable with that now just because of how the last 2 years have played out. And that's really what it's like being an entrepreneur sometimes. It's like kind of feast or famine sometimes. And you're stressed out about, am I going to pay the bills this month, or I'm going to do this for the month? And then other times you're just like, oh, I can buy whatever I want. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, it's a weird thing, right?
That's exactly. And the other thing I think that is really sort of hardwired into entrepreneurs is this ability to look for and recognize opportunity. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, is that, you know, you're kind of invited on a radio show, and then what do? You kind of follow up and say, hey, need another show? Right.
Yeah.
And not everyone does that. Entrepreneurs are always like, look and go, oh, there might be something there. Right.
I will say 99.9% of everything I've ever gotten positive in my career was because I just had the balls to ask. And I know it sounds so stupid, but like, okay, so you want to reach out to whoever, it doesn't matter. Pick somebody that you idolize. It's like, send them an email. They don't get back to you. What changes? Nothing. Yeah. You email them 10 times. They never get back to you. Nothing changes in your life. But if like you do that to 100 people, one or two might get back to you. And all it takes is one. And like, I noticed that with the show. It's like, it kind of, I almost quit, God, more than I can remember at this point doing it, because it's kind of like, it's not really making a bunch of money. It doesn't, like, selling ads is sucky and I'm not really a salesperson. So it's kind of like, well, I'm networking, but like, I'm not really networking for anything. So what am I really doing with it? It's like, great, Kevin knows all these people, kind of like I spent an hour with them. So I don't really know them. It's like, they know who I am when I send them, hey, you were on the show 3 years ago, here's your link. And they're like, oh yeah, how's it going? But like, if I went up to them in public, they'd probably have to take 30 seconds to be like, who is this guy? We check. Okay, like maybe I'd have to give him some more clues. But I think the thing that happened a couple of years ago is I had like Scott Cooper when he was doing his book From Andreessen Horowitz on. Okay. After that, it was like the quality of guests just like shot up. It's like you need one really well-known, respected guest, and then everything, the floodgates just kind of opened, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, and I'm not telling that to brag. I'm telling that because it takes one break like that for me to, okay, I need to keep doing this, right? Or it makes sense for what I'm doing. And I think that's what entrepreneurs are always kind of looking for, and maybe like always get, you're just looking for that like one next little break. And it doesn't have to be this huge thing. It's like, because, you know, you feel like you're going one step forward, five step back. And, you know, when that keeps happening, you're like, this is stupid. Like, what am I doing? Like, maybe I just need to get a real job and stop doing this, right? And just check out. I don't know. Like, I think the thing for me anyway, what motivates me to keep being an entrepreneur is like, and I reference my dad. It's like, I remember this like it was yesterday. It was like grade eight. He used to drive me to school because he worked downtown. And I asked him, because I knew he hated it. Like, he hated working the government. And he's retired now, but I remember asking him, I was like, I don't understand. Like, how can you just do this every day? Like, you hate it so much. And he just, his response to me was like, I don't know. You just do it. And I was like, that was such a depressing thing. And I never wanted to be that. Like, I know I could probably get some sort of job and probably hate it. And I don't think I'm necessarily the best employee. I think that's why I hate it, because I I never understood the 9-to-5 thing. And I think you'd relate to this, like as a creative person and as a designer, you can't really tell me like, you need to be creative 9-to-5, Monday to Friday. Like it doesn't work like that. I used to, my best, to be honest, not so much anymore, just because I have kids and it's just not possible anymore, but like 10 p.m. to like 2 or 3, 4 in the morning. That yeah. was my best time. And so like, why wouldn't I be doing design and being creative during my best time? Because that's when you're going to get the best output. Because I'm half asleep till like noon most days and drinking coffee. So it's like, I never understood that as a creative person. You could probably relate to that.
I'm wired the same way. I'm not a morning person at all. And I think it's, I don't know if it's a universal truth, but it sure feels like it. I don't know if entrepreneurs ever make good employees. I guess like once you've been kind of, you know, off the leash, like out on your own and you're doing all this stuff and you're building. And that's the thing that entrepreneurs, like the one thing that seems to be very common is, or part of it is you like to build something, build a business, build a product, build a service, just build. But we're not like, I would not make a good employee. I would try, but I know I wouldn't do very well.
My other problem too, and I knew it was going to be my downfall, is like, we were on this contract for a while and I literally told the owner, I was like, you're doing this wrong. And you want, like, I've been through idea acquisition and I've onboarded, I built a product that we had one code base and a ton of customers using that code base and sure they had their logo and colors and whatever. I was like, you're not building that. We need to change a bunch of stuff about it. How the whole project is due, like how your whole architecture, or you will not be able to onboard your second, third, fourth, fifth client. And he didn't really like that. Fair enough. But I was just like, okay. And I didn't last very long, but it was my own kind of, I also followed that up by saying they're only really using me 30%. So it was kind of my own fault. But part of me is just like, look, I want, when I'm working on something, I want it to succeed. What I said probably sounds like, oh, Kevin has a huge ego. And I try really not to have a huge ego about it. It's like, and you probably know this too. It's like, you build a bunch of products, you run your own company. It's like, you can look somebody in the face and say like, what you're doing is maybe you'll succeed, but it's the hard way of doing it. If we just change it a bit, we can make this successful. And that's the place I was coming from. I don't know how it was taken, but
I hope that even today, like I hope that when my employees come with stuff like that, that I'm like that. And there's a give and take. And I think there is, because I think any of my employees would come up and be like, hey, give your head a shake. And I don't think, you know, they
would not worry about it, right? But you also fostered that culture, which I think is super important, right? To be able to take that feedback.
Well, and I think like we've really worked hard to have a culture in our business of open and constructive debate, not arguments, just constructive debate. Because as a startup, you know, like you don't have time. Like one of the things that's so precious is time. And we, you know, you can't have people just all agreeing, right? So you have to be able to go like, you don't, like you'll never succeed. You need to have. And so my team are really great and they're really smart people. And I'm like, if I need them to share that, I need that. And as a team, then we can come up and go, yeah, no, that might not be the best way. And I know at times I have to sort of hear all this stuff and it percolates in my head. And then I have to go back and go, okay, here's the vision. Here's where we're going. I think, but it's rarely just sort of me in the corner. It's that after a while you get to pick all these things up and hear all these viewpoints so you can go, okay, now it's my role to point in that direction. But that's a huge value. And to me, I look at it the other way, is that's probably someone that really missed out on some experience and valuable insight that you were offering and just, you know, may have failed because of that. Right.
Yeah. It is what it is. And like, I guess, but I think that goes back to, it's kind of like that entrepreneurial mindset, right? It's like, it's kind of at this point, that's all I can think about. It's like, it's not really, it's almost like tied to your identity in some ways. It's kind of like, this is who I am. I don't know if I could go back to being a regular employee. Like I don't know if I could even do it, no matter how great the company or was or wasn't. It just doesn't really matter.
I know I couldn't. I already know that. Like, at some point, if we end up like, let's say at some point, unless we get acquired or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to stay on for a few years. Pretty sure the clock will be sort of ticking. I'll do everything I can.
Whiteboard, numb yeah, days but left.
And honestly, I'll be honest with you, any entrepreneur I know that's exited has not made it past that. Like, they've made it up to that date. And yeah. that is literally it. And they're all great people and they worked and they did their best, but it's not how we're wired. And I think it's such a different culture. And for some people, it's exactly like it fits. It's just for entrepreneurs, it's almost like, oh, I kind of spoiled myself. I can't do it anymore. I can't do that. I have to succeed as an entrepreneur because I don't have a plan B, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually curious about that because I'm one of those people that actually tries to build in some sort of plan B or work on something as a plan B. I always kind of been a plan B guy, but you're not. I'm not curious now. Because there's different mindsets. Like, I guess, but dry one's successful, right?
Yeah, but like my plan B would be another
startup
business, another business, yeah, another okay. like Fair some enough. Other type of business. And my plan B, the other side, like my plan B, and it's the same. I think I view things the same way. Because I'm just sort of wired that way in the terms of opportunity, always looking for opportunity, always looking for opportunity. So in a way, it's like I've kind of built up plan B with investments, like in real estate and stock and everything else.
Because
I'm always on the lookout for opportunity that way too. And so it's, you know, business is this is that. But my plan B, I guess, is it'll never be likely I'll go work for somebody. Like that just doesn't seem to even be in, like, I can't even picture it.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess that's kind of my same thing. It's like, plan B is like, I'm working on a couple other little side projects that might turn into something. And you're right. My plan B would maybe like freelance for a while, not really look to get a job.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Like, hopefully one of these podcasts blows up.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yes. Come on, Spotify.
Yeah.
Pay me $100 million or $200 million or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you bring up some interesting points there where as an entrepreneur, it's your mind or your DNA or whatever never seems to really shut off. Like it isn't sort of a 9-to-5. Like I force myself to work pretty set hours. And I force myself to try not to do evening and weekends because like I said, I was talking with, I don't remember when it was someone earlier on one of the shows. And I said, you know, being an entrepreneur, it's not like a marathon. It's like walking around the globe. Like it is, you can't even say marathon. It is such a long haul that I don't think you can keep the 80 hour a week pace up. You can't do it for long. If you want to be in for long haul, you have to be able to shut your brain off at times and be able to move away and do something different. So you're rested and can keep going on this steady, steady, steady pace.
Yeah. And that's definitely something I've struggled with over the last, especially the pandemic. Cause it's like, what else was I going to do?
Yeah.
Like you can only binge watch Netflix for so long until you've seen everything. And then you're just like, okay, I'm just going to go downstairs and putz around on the computer for a few hours. Like
that's a really unique time. And it was a good lesson. Like last winter, we couldn't cross the border. So we were in Canada. We hadn't been in Canada for like 9 or 10 years. And in the winter, I'm not a good winter person anymore. So we got stationary bikes. So at least we binge watch Netflix, we'd be pedaling.
Interesting.
Felt like we didn't do anything all winter. Like that was a really hard winter. And now that we've come back down to the States here and it's warmer. It's like, okay, now we can get out and do stuff and try and stay active. And we're really pushing to make sure we're doing stuff and staying active because it was really hard physically, really hard mentally to do that. And so I'm hoping that we're almost through this bloody thing and it's totally changed the world for everybody. Right.
Yeah.
So learner now, because I know Greg was on last week and again, John was on, but this is pre-learner days. Yeah. But what I'm curious about is especially coming from the design side and everything, I think it's going to be a very different story. And that's why it was really cool to have you guys both on. And I'm planning to run the shows back to back because it's
okay,
a very
cool.
different perspective, right? Tell me about Learner.
So Learner came really out of Zept. I don't know how much Greg talked about Zept or not, but basically Zept was an international student recruitment platform that clearly was not going to make it through the pandemic unless we just raise a bunch more money and kind of wrote it out. We started talking about building student profiles probably two summers ago this point. And so Learner kind of came out of, we were like, well, how are we going to work this in and blah, blah, blah. And so it kind of, we kind of built some prototypes around it, but never actually really built anything, no code, nothing around it. And then we kind of just like tried to build an assistant for Zept and do a couple other things. And then we're kind of like, okay, let's actually, we started looking at no code, which was the first time I really dived into it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think part of the reason some of the earlier startups that never made it 80% or 20%, or there was probably like 30 of them. I think I tried to figure it out one day. They just never went anywhere, never even launched, just because of whatever. It doesn't matter. And I think a lot of that came down to one of me or the developer that I was working with at the time, who was usually like a friend, one of us would get bored or just like, I don't have time for this anymore. Like whatever. Right. But what I found with no code, especially as a designer, is I could actually do some of the development. Shocker. Yeah. And so we started building this, you know, kind of at the end of Zept when we were kind of winding it down. And one of the investors from Zept put in a little bit of money for to start this Learner. And so Learner today is kind of an early MVP, I would say. We're basically trying to build something that, if you like this podcast, we'll recommend like a related other podcast or book or course or something around that. There's a bunch of new features that we're trying to maybe go as like maybe a light kind of LMS direction. We might end up trying to build where a little bit more like onboarding stuff, where if you're a company that wants to onboard a new employee or potential employee, like you might say, like you might want to watch these courses or read these books or listen to these podcasts or whatever, or promote internally, kind of saying like, oh, you want to get promoted, maybe you need to take these courses, and then HR can kind of track where you are throughout this. So this is stuff we're kind of exploring. It's interesting because John, Greg, and I, none of us are developers, but Greg and I are basically doing majority of the development. And I would even say Greg's doing most of the development and I'm kind of handling the design side. And what I found about no code is I really think it's kind of the future of building a lot of applications, maybe not all, but I think in a lot of cases, you can basically do everything in it. And it's so much faster. So we can, stuff that would take 6 months, we're doing in a week. Like, and it sounds crazy. Yeah. And I would have said, no, that's not possible. But like, till you actually go through and build it, it's that quick. Like it just, the time to iterate and do stuff is astronomical. And as somebody like, I always could code the front end, like HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript. I could do all the responsive stuff. And I kind of taught myself how to do that. So, and I actually had built apps before, not because I wanted to be a developer, it's because I wanted to be a better designer. Because if you understand what's buildable in code, then you can be thinking about that in, as you're doing design. And I know people would argue that it, knowing that you could cut down your designs to fit into what's codable, I guess. But the reality is it has to be codable, right? And it's not about an art piece. And you and I talked about this before. It's like, oh, app and the web is not an art piece, especially it's if you're art, trying to convert. Yeah. It's like, and the sad reality is if I like the color purple and I want the checkout button to be purple, but the orange button converts better, well, I'm going to make it orange, not purple. Like it's
exactly. There's a big stark fence between art and design. And design is about communication and solving a problem and serving a purpose. I should say it's not like art doesn't serve a purpose, but like there's a function and there's a need behind it and there's the reality. And like you said, like, what's the point of designing something if it literally cannot be built with the built technically or built to budget? Like it doesn't matter what the stopping point is. Right. So I fully agree with you is understanding it is knowing how to innovate within it rather than having something butchered, right?
Totally. And you can connect Figma. We're using bubble.io. I don't think I mentioned that, but as the no code solution, and you can connect Figma to it and it imports it kind of okay. So you have to fix it a bunch, but, and I've done it before in the past, but basically all the design is done in Bubble as well. So we don't wireframe, we don't mock up anything. It's done on a branch in Bubble and we iterate like right there. So we're doing development, we're doing design, we're doing everything inside of Bubble and its web-based editor. And so, yes, I know you could argue that that whole process needs to happen. And I, in a lot of cases, I think it does, but I think the difference is everything's basically being done. If you understand the design patterns, you can iterate on them on a branch that may never go live, or you can iterate them live. And it doesn't matter because it's like, it sucks today, tomorrow it sucks a bit less, and it just keeps sucking less, right? And eventually, after like a week or two of iterations, you're like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, move on to the next thing, right? And so the amount that we've been able to cut down and be able to build on this platform as a non-developer, I started telling a lot of entrepreneurs, you want to start a company, build your prototype in this. We might rebuild the whole platform if it's successful in, you know, like a React, for example. I don't know, we could pick a language or whatever's trendy in a year or two. But it would take probably 2 years to replicate it in React, for example, where we've built it in, you know, 6 months, right? So it's hard to...
It's like that prototyping is so, so incredibly important. And I know, like, you know, my first sort of hack together prototype to just get some feedback for dry run, like it just took way too long. And to look at it now, I'm like, no, this is the way to go, because that prototyping, getting to an MVP, getting that feedback, getting that customer, understanding the problems, all that stuff is so incredibly important. And you want to be able to do that fast. And then what happens if you have to rebuild it later, which you might not, or maybe part of it or whatever, that's sort of irrelevant. You have to get to that place really quickly where you know what you have to build and what it is.
Well, 100% agree. The other thing that I think, and you probably agree with this, is like, I have OCD around this stuff. And so I want to be able to do the whole thing if I need to. Mm-hmm. And these no code solutions allow somebody that ability, right? And anybody can teach themselves because it's just a click and drag interface, right? Like if you've used Word or Excel, you can use a no code platform. Yeah. And so the barrier to entry is zero. And like, I'm actually building something with another friend just kind of as a side hobby project. And I was like, we have to go no code because like I can at least do all the technical and I'm not relying on somebody else. Because like I said before, it's like the more people you add, especially when it's not bringing in any money, it's one of us is get bored or you don't have time or whatever. Life happens, right? There's no hard feeling. But if I can take it from, you know, two friends having a conversation at a bar to an Android, an iOS, and a web app in, you know, days or weeks, it's kind of like, okay. And, you know, usually you can start with a template or you can start from scratch. So you're maybe out a few hundred dollars if you buy a template, like a few hundred dollars. So you can test, you know, if you can test an idea for $200 to $500 as an MVP, iterate on it, kill it off in 6 months if it's nothing, and you're out $500 and a bunch of time, that's better than being out $50,000 and a ton of time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we've all done that before. And it's pretty painful. And, you know, but the other thing that I see is the ability, like for us with dry run, like it's really sophisticated, complicated, it just keeps growing and building. Yeah. And it's but where there'd be really interesting opportunities is on the, like on the training and e-learning side and those things, like that there's things that like, we could do something much more like software and move people through and build something like that. And I know even in internally with our like with our dry run website, like when we redid our website last year, our designers use Webflow, and it is just Webflow. Like love it's it. Amazing. Like
I tell everybody, cow, this is
unbelievable. I would never ever go back. It is unbelievable.
Well, and I'm curious, then, did you buy a template or did you start from scratch in Webflow?
No, they started from scratch.
Okay, see, I even tell people, buy a template in Webflow and then customize it like crazy, because it's like 90% of it's done for you. Like swap out all the graphics, change all the colors, even move around the layout. But it's like
I should say
like $50 or $70.
Yeah. Actually, I should say I'm not even sure, because honestly, I didn't do it. Our designers did it. And we had like, you know, because to make it successful, like a website like that, it was very much on the structure, the messaging, how people move through the site, all of that. Once we nailed all of that down, then just putting sort of the skin on it. I suspect that it was just so much of that foundation was how people move through the site. Everything else was decided beforehand that I don't know if they could have, maybe they could, maybe they did find a template that started them through, but whatever, it was this looks terrific. It works great.
Even if you start from scratch, it is so much faster than hand coding that stuff. And you could argue Webflow is no code. They do say that's kind of a no code solution. You kind of need to understand CSS and HTML at a basic level to use it, because you're, this is kind of how it is. But again, you could easily learn it and kind of struggle through it. And if you don't, buy a template, swap everything out, because then you don't have to put in all the animations. And I know adding animation isn't that hard, but it's like you take 100 not hard things. That's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. Yeah, exactly. And it's, people have to, like, businesses have to move quick. We didn't move quick initially, because it was kind of a project early on in that. And also holy cow, I think we got something here. Well, now we got to move fast. Right. And it's a different, but, for people that are just starting up something, you do want to move fast. Like timing is so important for businesses. Like it is incredibly important. Like you saw what COVID, did, like you said, to Zept, it was a challenge. Timing is really critical. And with dry run, sort of in a way, I'll be honest with you, I think it took too long, but what it's done is it gave us really good timing in the end, which is just a fluke, because we kind of did it wrong in a way and it's working out really well. Historically, you want to be really fast. But timing is such a critical thing. If you're able to do it fast, at least you give yourself the opportunity to adjust the timing. You just don't want to be too slow and be behind, right?
Yeah. And it's such a struggle to know what to build next, right? And kind of follow that roadmap. And then, especially with a small team, it's like, how many of us are going to spend some time, maybe raising money or trying to get users or trying to promote on social media or build features? That, I think, is the hardest thing to know. And then it's like you get a little carrot dangled in one of those verticals and you're like, okay, everybody's like chases over there, right? And then it's like they chase back to something else. It's like, it's so hard to stay with your roadmap, try not to add all the feature requests that you get from like potential clients. And then you can end up building all these features for like potential clients, but none of them ever sign up. And then you're kind of just like chasing your tail, right? And that is a real struggle too.
And I think the thing that we struggle with, we talk about as a team constantly, is we're talking with our customers every day, potential customers, always. We have such an open line of communication. We have for our partners, they have a Slack channel even. We need that information back. But the real point where you have to be so disciplined is, and we talk about all the time, is understanding the problem that they're facing. And then getting some insight on how they do it now, but truly understanding the problem. And then we innovate for the answer. And when we've gone into trouble a few times is that we kind of hear the problem, but what we say is what they're asking for is the solution, or what they're asking for just relates directly to the problem. And that's when we've gotten into trouble, when we kind of go, they've done it this way. This is the problem. But when we really think about it, the solution is actually way over here, and we should never rely on our customers to hand us the solution. We're not doing our job then. That's up to us to do that. And it's hard sometimes to see through the trees, like through the clouds, and go, oh, and every, like we just had one that honestly, I think we were battling through something for 2 weeks here. And all of a sudden it was just like the cloud list went, that's what they're trying to solve. And we have to do it way over here. It is not what we thought it was, and it was not what they thought it was. And it's just a lesson over and over again. And, you know, the problem, and iterate fast and get it out there and learn from it. Right. And it's tricky. It's really tricky.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too, that's been a bit of a struggle, I think, is even just like trying to launch this learner, and we're kind of MVP, like I said, it's, there's been a few people that are like, oh, I could really use it here, but it's not here yet. And it's like, do we move it there? Because a couple of people said they might like it. We've heard it a few times now. They're like, okay, there might be something there and we should maybe add that to the roadmap. But if they're not paying you money for that,
it's hard.
Do you chase that? Like,
It's so hard. And we've struggled with that too, because you're getting all this information in. And in retrospect, like hindsight's 20/20, so you can always go, oh, that was the idea. And you're always just inundated. Like I always say, it's like drinking from a fire hose. You get all this information. And for us, we had to do a really major pivot. And it took, you know, a lot of pull and a lot of the CPAs and CFOs kind of beating us over head with over and over again. We need you. Forget those. We need you. Mm-hmm. Before we finally realized, oh, we were going the wrong place. This is where we have to go. And then it just starts. The momentum just starts going and going and going. You're like, oh, this is what it feels like. There's no definitive answer. It's really challenging for founders to be able to look at it and how do you prioritize all of, like you said, well, we had a few people ask for this. It might be the massive golden opportunity, or it might be a red herring. And it's a hard thing call to determine at the time, right?
I also think too, though, you have to come into a startup, or at least in my opinion, with whatever your original idea is. Chances are 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, 3 years, it's not going to be anything like your original idea. You hope it's some version of it. But I think if you go in saying like, you know what, I just want to build something that's successful and people use. Yeah. And this is the original idea and I'm fine pivoting. Cause like, I don't see pivoting as this bad thing, where it seemed to be for a number of years, like you can't pivot. It's bad. It's like, who cares?
Everybody's pivoting constantly.
But I always look like Apple's the most, one of the most valuable company, depending on when this air, like they fail all the time. It doesn't matter. Think back to how many stupid things have they done even in the last decade. And the one that comes to me is that stupid, and I have it, is the Apple Pencil, the first one that plugs into like the side of the iPad to like charge. Like that was the dumb idea. Like the putting on top was way better. But like maybe that's not like a failure, but they clearly pivoted away from that to where it charges on top. To me, that's a pivot. Failure, call it whatever you want. But like companies do this all the time. And if you want to be around, you need to keep doing this.
Yeah. Right? And the pivot, it's that's where it makes it tricky, because it's like, okay, here's the market I think I'm serving. Is the pivot in we're not solving their problem correctly, so we pivot the product? In our case, what it was the pivot was we built a product and we were trying to sell it to the wrong bunch. And then finally went, oh, we sell to that bunch. And then it just gives that roadmap and everything sort of falls into place. And you could potentially have both sides. It could be like, well, we got to pivot the product and we got to still find the right market. If there's a root at it that is really solving a problem and really effective, you have a chance of success, right? But you have to be like, that's the difference between success and not, is you have to be open and follow those opportunities. If you just say, this is my belief and this is what I'm going to do till the ends of the earth, and it turns out the market isn't there, the product isn't there, like you're done. You're not going to make it, right?
Yeah. And I guess like, why fight that if you want to keep building something?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Success has to be the most important thing, and solving a problem, right?
Well, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I never actually really cared about what the product actually does. And I understand how stupid of a statement that sounds. But what I mean by that is I'm more interested in solving the design and UX challenges of that product than what the actual product does. And then I think if you think of it like that, then it doesn't matter where the product goes, because there's always new challenges to solve. But if you come at a product and you say like, this product just sends email, I don't want to work on that. It's like, yeah, but there's a lot of complexity and UX challenges around sending email or whatever the product is, right? And like, I'm more interested in solving those UX problems than the actual like core of this product sends email. And it's the same with Learner. It's like, if it goes to be an LMS, if it goes to be just a consumer thing, that social networky type thing, like it almost doesn't matter because I'll use it how I want to use it. And whatever, however it makes money down the road, obviously is important.
Yeah, but the vision is still the same, where it's about learning and it's about sharing. And the same thing with DryRun, like it's about lighting the way for businesses, their way forward. Like there's some fundamental sort of vision of we're trying to equip you to make better decisions and understand where you're going and mitigate your risk and how we do it. That's where it's changed and how we equip finance pros to help businesses do that rather than more the business owner to do that. And but the vision kind of is the same. The mission, I guess, to some is kind of the same, but you start getting down to the product market fit. They always talk about product market fit. That's where there's some changes there, and that's where you have to move, right?
Totally. And I think my younger self would not have understood that. And I don't think it's until I realized that I could do this as well. And I think what it comes down to for me, and it probably sounds bad, is like, I worked for people a number of years ago that I was just like, I wasn't happy with how they were doing it. And I was like, I could do this just as bad as they're doing it. And I was like, I think that was kind of the moment. And I don't mean that in like a mean way. It was just like, none of us really know what we're doing. I think at the end of the day, it's just like, we're just trying to figure it out wherever we are in our life cycle of a product. It's like, either we're just starting or we're 3 years in, we're just trying to figure out how to get to the next level. Right. And I was like, well, they don't know what they're doing. So I could at least do it just as bad as they do. I don't know what I'm doing either. So why not do it myself? Right. And then it's kind of where things went, and it seemed to have, it's worked out for me. And like, I think the interesting thing now that I've been through kind of idea and actually getting acquired by a product I worked on a number of years ago, actually got acquired. That was such a big eye-opening experience, and how, like, looking back on how hard that was and how complicated it was. And I wasn't even really doing all the negotiations. I was involved in kind of some of them, but it just, how almost like lucky I was to even have it happen once, never mind hopefully like a bunch of other times. But I think just coming at it with trying to make whatever I do, like, obviously I want to be happy with what gets shipped, but trying to make sure that I'm open to these new ideas and changes as things keep happening, right, in the landscape, and pivoting when you need to pivot.
And it's, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, like, well, that's what learners about. You're learning every single day, and you're trying to shortcut your learning and make sure you're spending time on learning the right things fast enough. And because you got to be equipped for this, it's hopefully you recognize this and you learn from other entrepreneurs, and you find those shortcuts, and hopefully we can share with other entrepreneurs to help them give the shortcuts as well, because man, it's so hard. It's such a hard journey, right?
100%. And the funny thing, like, I've been super lucky to be able to interview some like really busy people, and they all still do more than, like, I don't know, you'd probably consider yourself a busy person. I'd consider myself a busy person. But like, when you meet people that are like CEO of a huge company, and they still like get in time to exercise, they get in time to listen to podcasts or learn, or, you know, go for a walk or whatever, like spend time with their family. And you're just like, wow, you, somebody that clearly is busy, like actually really busy, can still fit in all this stuff. There's no reason somebody like myself can't do the exact same thing or figure out how to do the same thing. Right. And that to me was kind of eye-opening too. It was just like, wow, okay, these people still prioritize whatever they need to prioritize. Doesn't matter how busy they are, they still make it work for them and do all the things that they want to do. Yeah. Where I find sometimes like people that are a little bit busy, you're kind of like, I don't have time for that. It's like, yeah, you do. Right. And I think just recognizing that is helpful.
Yeah. I know with our team, it's funny. We always like if anyone says busy, then they really get piled on Slack or Zoom or whatever, because it's fully engaged. That's Jeremy, one of my came up fully engaged. You're not busy, you're fully engaged. And, but it's kind of funny because when I look at them, like, yeah, you know what? Like, you know, I try and keep, like I said, I try and keep pretty regular hours. I know it's hard for entrepreneurs to do that, but I try and keep pretty regular hours, but there's no wiggle room. There's no, like, you start and you go, and it's trying to be as clean and as efficient as possible and make use of that time. But I think part of the reason I'm able to do that and be really efficient and kind of sprint is that there will be that end of the day. I'm not going to try and go to midnight. It's like, no, it's the end of the day. And now I'm going to go and go for a walk, go for a bike, go for, do something like that. That's important because that's how you can keep going day to day and be 100%. Really efficient and effective.
100%. But the flip side of that is you could work till midnight every night of the week if you really wanted to. Like, there's enough stuff on your plate that you could do that.
It would never end. And that's the part that's really challenging for entrepreneurs, is that it'll never end. But I firmly believe that, like, you can do that for a short period, but if you try and do that for any length of time,
you burn out,
which means you're putting in the same amount of time, but you're only being as effective as if you're working a really solid, 100%. Highly efficient day. And it ends up being just a miserable life for you and everyone around you.
No, 100%. Well, and I think that just goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. It's like, use these tools that are out there. It's like Webflow speeds up. I rebuilt our whole marketing site in a day.
Yeah.
And which would probably taken 2, 3, 4 weeks before, but I use a tool that sped it up to a day. Right. It's like, we use no code because we can go from months to days. Like, that's the stuff that you need to optimize. So then you don't feel bad if you put in 8 hours in a day because you did 2 days of work or 2 weeks worth of work because you're using these tools. And what I'm about to say, I would have totally disagreed with myself even like a year ago or maybe a couple of years ago, is like, if you can pay for tools to help you save time in a day, it's totally worth it. Like, if it's
absolutely. Yeah. We try and stay very much in our lane. What are we about? What is Dryrun about? What is our kind of our sort of IP, where and what can kind of be outsourced, right? Because there's always a temptation to kind of build everything. So like our sort of client success or support sort of systems, build any of that. Our onboarding software that kind of walks people through. And by the way, it was, I little side note here, but I had a little Logitech doorbell that it was supposed to connect with HomeKit and all that stuff. And I installed it and I spent like 2 weeks and I know I installed it right, but it wouldn't stay connected for more than a half an hour. And I finally just said, like, screw it. Gone. Like, that thing's gone. Returned it. Got in a ring today. And connected it. It was like a half hour. The whole thing was running. But what was amazing was the onboarding. And so not only is it efficient for the business, because now their clients aren't coming and bugging them and all that kind of stuff, but even when, as you're talking about no code things and like that, I'm like, what could we do in our onboarding to make it easier for our clients and less of a lift? And so any of those systems, like, you know, we have an incredible number of software systems that are helping us on the sales side through to success, through to everything, so that we can stay focused on what we're good at.
Yeah.
It costs money, but honestly, it'll never cost as much as all the hours we'd lose.
Yeah. I know it's hard when you're starting out to be like, you need to spend $20 here, $30 here, $50 here on these tools. And like, maybe you can't do that day one, but the sooner you can start doing that, your stress level just goes way, way down.
Yeah, exactly. And it costs less in the end. Like, you can't build these things. Like, I can't build Intercom and that's what we use, like, you know, for client success. And they're just things that you can't, like, you guys came from Mailout, right? You know, it's, you should not be trying to set something up for that either. Like, there's so many systems and services that you can use that can be really highly effective and they're updated all the time. So I totally agree with you. it's knowing, drawing the line of where are you building, what's in your lane, and what are you innovating, yeah. and everything else that you can get outside of that, just do it.
Yeah. You know? And I also think even just personally too, I've started to get tools that I'm willing to pay for a month, like my calendar app. Like I use that Fantastical. It's like $7 a month. People are like, why are you paying for calendar? It's like, because I have like 10 calendars and they all go into this one thing. And then it's like, mm-hmm. I use Calendly to like send out links. It was like book that goes into those calendars, and Calendly checks all those 10 different calendars to say, when is Kevin available? Like, it sounds stupid, but like, okay, yeah, sure. That costs me, you know, $20 US a month for all that. But you know how much time that saves me?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I can go on. There's other tools that if you can use to like, but that to me is like, I'd pay $100 for that.
Yeah.
Cause it's just so time saving. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, from the other side, that's where those guys knew they were onto something, when people 100%. Are willing to spend some serious dollars because you're helping them so much. And, I said it'd be about 40, 45 minutes. Yeah. We're like hour 10. So
good, man.
Greg, you and I talk forever. We could keep going for about 2-3 hours on this, I think. But I'm sure people are like, they probably got stuff to go do too. So they're going to be wanting to wrap it here. Anyway, this has been awesome. Like, this has been such a great conversation. And Learner, like I was mentioned when I was on with Greg too, it's really cool. I've got an account there, you guys. And I know I'm probably more of a creeper. I actually have to update my account and do that stuff too. But go check out Learner, L with two L's, learner.co, right?
Yeah, that's .co, yeah.
Learner.co, two L's. How should people find you?
Pretty easy. I'm on most of the platforms. I think the best is probably just Kevin Horek, HOREK.com. Or if you just search like Kevin Horek on pretty much anything, my last name's kind of unique, I guess, that it's not really everywhere. So pretty much easy to, but happy to connect with people on LinkedIn. My email's right in my thing. So you can just add it and connect with me and
happy
to chat with anybody really.
Awesome. Terrific. And building the future, they can find you on you said, every sort of podcast network. Check it out, guys. It's a really awesome show. A great one to listen to. And again, thanks for listening to Turning Point. Again, I'm Blaine Birch, co-founder and CEO at DryRun. If you're looking for, especially if you're a CPA or CFO and you're looking for a way to peer into the future, model different outcomes, solve those problems, come check us out at dryrun.com. We would love to chat with you, walk you through DryRun and show you how we can help you. Thanks, Kevin. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Blaine. As always, it's great to chat with you.